Okay, time for class.
All right.
Thank you. Stand guard.
Jai Radha Madhavama Kunya Bihari. His divine grace, Abhaya Chananana Bhaktivananda Goswami Srila Prabhupada Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Jai, Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Jai, Namacharya Srila Huridas Thakur Jai, Friends Say Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda Sridwaita Gadadha, Sri Vasudhi Gaur Bhaktivananda Jai, Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopagavata Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavaram Kijai Maturam Kijai Navadidam Kijai Jagannatha Swami Kijai Manamaya Kijai Shri Madhila Sidevi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai Gaur Premananda Hari 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 Gaur. All glories, the assembled devotees. All glories, the assembled devotees. All glories, the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda. Okay. So before reading from Bhagavatam class, I just want to mention it's the celebration of the appearance of Vrindavan Das Thakur. So I'll say a few words about Vrindavan Das Thakur. Om Ganat, Maranda Shah, Gavanjana, Shalakaya, Chakshun, and Meditam, Yenatas, Mahan, Shigave, Maha. So Vrindavan Das Thakur It's considered to be the incarnation of Srila Vyasadeva, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. And Vrindavanadas Thakur has a very interesting story of his childhood. His mother's name was... Oh, you want to protect it? Okay. You need to put clothes in front. His mother's name was Narayani, and she got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when she was 4 years old. She was actually in Shivas Thakur's house, and what happened is that, very interesting story, is that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave his remnants to Narayani, and after he gave the remnants of his prasadam, because we know the remnants of a great devotee, especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, are very potent. So he said to Narayani, chant Hare Krishna and be in ecstasy. So Narayani started to roll on the ground in ecstasy and just like jump up and down, and everyone was shocked to see this four-year-old girl jumping up and down like that. And she later on became the mother of Vrindavanadas Thakur. Vrindavanadas Thakur's work was originally called the Chaitanya Mangal, and then later on became known as the Chaitanya Bhagavat, and it's the authoritative study of the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially when he was a child. The Chaitanya Charitamrita is the authoritative study of the later pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and also the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But the Chaitanya Bhagavat is the early pastimes, very many nectarian pastimes. I can just tell one and then go on to Bhagavatam. One of the pastimes told in the Chaitanya Bhagavat is that once upon a time, the children would like to hear this story, right? Once upon a time, in Lord Chaitanya's childhood home, of course his father was there, Jagannath Mishra, and Sachimata, his mother. And so this Brahmana visited their home. And the Brahmanas, generally, they cook for themselves. They wouldn't eat anyone else's cooking. So, when the Brahmana visited their home, Jagannath Mishra offered the Brahmin some ingredients to cook with. So, the Brahmin started cooking, and he started to make the offering to his deity. He had a deity of Gopal. And what happened is that little Nimai, that's Lord Chaitanya when he was a little baby, crawled up to the offering and ate it, right, when the Brahmin was saying the mantras. It'd be like with one of the children here, would crawl up to the altar and start eating from the deity plate. Would any of you do that? What would happen if you did that? Your parents would get very angry, right? Very dangerous. So anyway, Jagannath Mishra, Lord Chaitanya's father, got very angry seeing this, and he basically didn't hit Lord Chaitanya. But he locked Lord Chaitanya in another room and asked the Brahmana to prepare more food for the deities. So the Brahmana cooked again, prepared more food for the deities. And Lord Chaitanya, even though he was locked in the room, he somehow or other got out, and he took the offering right when it was being offered to the deities. Again, he ate right from the deity plate. So then Jagannath Mishra got so angry that he picked up a stick and was running after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he threatened him, but everyone stopped him. The Brahmin stopped him. And the Brahmin said that it's Krishna's mercy. This day I'm not supposed to eat anything. Okay. So Lord Chaitanya's parents didn't like that. Because if someone comes to your home and they don't eat anything, this is the Indian culture, then it's an insult to the host. So you have to eat something every house you go to. That's one of the dangers of being a sannyasi. That every house you go to, they feed you, and after a while you get indigestion. I remember when I was visiting different homes in Sydney, one devotee came with me, his name was Anandamoya. He was very happy to be having prasadam at everyone's home. But after 2 days, he said, I will never go with you again, Maharaj. He was so traumatized, he doesn't even like to see me anymore. Because he ate so much. You know, in the beginning he was thinking, this is real enjoyment for Kauris in everyone's house. Anyway, getting back to the story. So they begged the Brahmin, you got to cook, you have to cook, you have to cook. So by this time it was midnight. And the Brahmin eventually, he cooked another meal, began to offer it to Gopal, but who showed up but Nimai. And Nimai started eating, the Brahman started screaming, he has taken it again. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that you were calling me, so I came to eat, so what's the problem? And then he showed his form as Gopal, as Krishna. And the Brahmana started jumping up and down in ecstasy, rubbing all the rice all over his body, rolling on the ground, and he was very happy. And at that point, some of the other residents in the house woke up and they thought the Brahmana was happy because finally he began to eat. He was hungry and finally ate, but actually he was happy because he saw Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his form. So, as Gopal. So this is one of the stories in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. It's a very wonderful book. We advise the devotees to read this literature. Some of you, I think, have read the Chaitanya Bhagavat, right? And it's also available as an audio book. If you don't have time to read, or if you don't know how to read, you can listen to it as an audio book. It's available online. And if anyone wants to find it, they can contact me. I can give them a copy of it. Okay. So now we'll go on to Srimad Bhagavatam. After celebrating Vrindavan Das Thakur's appearance, we're going to the 6th canto, 17th chapter, text 33. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Na hi asyasti priyah kaschin na priyah swa paro tapi va Atmatvat Sarva Bhutanam Sarva Bhuta Priyo Harehi Nayasyasti Priya Kaschin Na Priya Swaparo Piva Atmatvat sarva bhutanam
Atmatvat sarva bhutanam
Sarva bhuta priyo harihi
Sarva bhuta priyo harihi
Na yasya sti priya kaschin
Na yasya sti priya kaschin
Na priya swaparo piva
Na priya swaparo piva
Atmatvat sarva bhutanam
Atmatvat sarva bhutanam
Sarva Bhuta Priyo Harehi Na Yasya Sti Priya
Kaschin
Na Priya Swaparo Piva Atmatvat Sarva Bhutanam Sarva Bhuta Priyo Harehi
He has no one for his own relative, and no one is alien to him. He is actually the soul of all living entities. Thus he is the auspicious friend of all living beings, and is very near and dear to all of them. So purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada Gita. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his second feature, is the super soul of all living entities. As one's self is extremely dear, the super self of the self is still more dear. No one can be the enemy of the friendly super self, who is equal to everyone. Relationships of dearness or enmity between the Supreme Lord and the living beings are due to the intervention of the illusory energy. Because the three modes of material nature intervene between the Lord and the living beings, these different relationships appear. Actually, the living entity in his pure condition is always very near and dear to the Lord, and the Lord is dear to him. There's no question of partiality or enmity. Na yasyasti priya kaschana priya svaparopiva atmatvat sarva bhutanam sarva bhuta priyo hari. So Om Gana Tsugranda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmeditam Yena Tasmai Shigurvena Maha. So this is actually a very common topic that is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita as well as later on in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the seventh canto, first chapter in the seventh canto, and that's the Lord's being equal. Now in the beginning of the seventh canto, first chapter, we have Parikshit Maharaj questioning Shukadeva Goswami as to why the Lord favors the devotees and appears to be inimical towards the demons. And he says, isn't this a fault of partiality? Because that's actually a fault when you're partial. Just like if any one of us is partial to different people, that means that basically we're in the bodily conceptive life. I mean, we're partial to certain people because certain people are family members or have the same type of body. Or we're partial to human beings because we're the same species or maybe the same race of people. Or we're partial to our dog. Why are we partial to our dog? Does anyone know?
Because the dog is a fancy word. It's called obsequious. What does obsequious mean? Anyone know? Any English scholars here? What does it mean? Yeah. The dog always tries to please you. Why do people like dogs? Because when you get home, the dog greets you at the door. It's better than having a disciple, actually. After a while, the disciple just says, "When are you leaving, Gurudev? I'll drive you to the airport." But you're eating too much today, Gurudev. But dogs, they're just always there, waiting for you to come home. It's better than a wife, better than a disciple. I mean, sometimes I tell a brahmacharya, if you really want love, then get a dog. So it's less trouble than a wife. So anyway, sannyasi preaching there. So because the dog does something for us. In other words, we're partial because either we're connected through the body to some other living entity, or because someone does something for us, like if someone gives us a present, or let's say if someone is our boss at work and they pay our salary. If someone is our boss at work and they pay our salary, then we listen to them because of what they're doing for us. But with Krishna, Krishna doesn't have a material body, first of all. Looks like there's a fault in the microphone. The fault is actually in the microphone, I think, or in the cable. So Krishna doesn't have a material body, and so basically he's pure spirit, so everyone is related to him, so he sees everyone equally. Of course, there's that verse in the Gita, Samoham sarva bhuteshu namedvishosti na priha. I think most of you know that verse. Samo means I'm equal poise. Sarva bhuteshu, all living entities, and I have no friends, special friends, and no enemies. Of course, Krishna has friends in this spiritual world. We understand that. And Krishna acts like some people are his enemies in the material world. So that's one reason why we say Krishna is impartial, because he has a spiritual body. Another reason is that Krishna has everything he needs. As we were speaking yesterday, Krishna is optikama. Whatever he wants, he gets immediately. So he doesn't need anything. Let's say if one Lakshmi goes on strike in the spiritual world, what will happen? Then Lakshmi Sahasra Sata Sambrama Sevyamanam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. That means Krishna has unlimited Lakshmis. So let's say one Lakshmi does an industrial action. You understand? I'm not going to serve you, Krishna, because you don't love me enough. Then Krishna says, all right, you've got plenty of Lakshmis. If someone decides not to cook for Krishna, let's say in the temple you decide not to cook for Krishna, it's not that Krishna will starve to death. Of course, you will suffer because you're offense. But Krishna has plenty of other temples, plenty of places in the spiritual world where he's eating. He doesn't need your food, but he wants your devotion. So Krishna is really detached in this way because he doesn't need anything. But there's a very interesting story that sometimes Krishna acts like he needs something. I'll tell several stories about this. For pastime's sake. I mean, there's this story which is part of a temple story in South India, in Tirupati, how one time Krishna didn't have any money. Anyway, so it's an interesting story. You all know the story about Brigamuni. Brigamuni was going to all the different demigods, at least Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, and either insulting them, ignoring them, or kicking them to see who was actually in the mode of goodness. So first he goes to Lord Brahma, he ignores him. Lord Brahma gets a little angry, you're not in the mode of goodness. Then he goes to Lord Shiva and calls Lord Shiva just simply a guy with bones, he hangs out in crematoriums, dirty guy. And Lord Shiva gets so angry, he's getting ready to kill Brigamuni. And Parvati says, you know, don't do this, you know, he's your brother. Don't kill your brother, it's not a good idea. And then Brigamuni, he goes to Vishnu, and what does he do? He kicks Vishnu in the chest. And that's pretty heavy. Don't do that. And Vishnu to this day has a mark on his chest. It's called the Brigupada, the mark of Brigamuni's foot. So Vishnu said, please accept my obeisances. I'm sorry I had such a hard chest. Are any of you such great devotees that you're in the mode of goodness? Let's say if I go up to Paramakarna and kick him in the chest. He'll say, excuse me, Maharaj, I hurt your foot. No, he'll say, I'll never invite you to prasadam again. Yeah, I mean, definitely not so much of the mode of goodness there. So then, anyway, actually, there was that story in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes where Lord Nityananda kicked Sivananda saying, and Sivananda said, wow, this is great. I mean, if Prabhupada kicked me, I would be in ecstasy. He never kicked me, unfortunately. So anyway, so Brihamuni kicked Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu apologized for having a hard jest, but Lord Vishnu's wife was pretty upset with Lord Vishnu. And so Lord Vishnu's wife, of course that's Lakshmi, she said, you know, I can't stand it, you're too tolerant. I'm leaving. So Lakshmi left Lord Vishnu, and she came down to the earth planet, and you know, she was so fried out with Lord Vishnu's actions. This is a pastime. Don't think that this is that Lord Vishnu has become a poor man. But at that time, he had no Lakshmi. You know, we call money Lakshmi in the Krishna conscious movement, don't we? So Lord Vishnu had no Lakshmi. So he became a poor man. So he started to look for Lakshmi. He came down to the earth. And he was looking for Lakshmi because he had no Lakshmi. So as he was looking for Lakshmi, before he found Lakshmi, he ran into another girl. And he fell in love with her. This girl happened to be, from the Ramayana pastimes, an incarnation of what we call Maya Sita. I think most of you know the Ramayana pastimes where Ravana kidnapped Sita. He actually didn't kidnap Sita. He kidnapped Maya Sita, or a reflection of Sita Devi. Expansions, reflection, whatever. And Maya Sita actually had wanted to marry Lord Ram, but there was a problem because Lord Ram had taken a vow only to have one wife. Eka Patni Vrata, that's the Sanskrit for that. And so Lord Ram said, wait till my next incarnation, you can marry me. So when Lord Vishnu was looking for Lakshmi, he ran into this girl who he had promised to marry in his previous incarnation, and he fell in love with her. But the problem was that this girl was from a very rich family. And so generally, you don't marry a poor man with a rich girl. It's not a good idea. You know, people should marry in the same status. You know, if you're rich, you marry a rich girl. If you're ugly, you marry an ugly girl. I mean, this is just part of life. Isn't it? I mean, at least as far as I understand. So, if I'm a sannyasi, I don't know about these things. So, anyway, so he fell in love with her, and he just proposed, and she said, I'd like to marry you, but you're pretty poor. And her family was completely opposed to it. So he thought, Lord Vishnu was poor at this point. So he thought, what am I going to do? I really love this girl. And so he went to one of the demigods, because Lakshmi wasn't there. So, and he took out a loan. He went to Kuvera. This is a famous story in South India. Some of you may have heard the story. But he went to Kuvera, it's also in the Puranas. He went to Kuvera, who happens to be the treasurer of the demigods, you know, the guy who runs the bank, ANZ. So he went to Kuvera, and he said, can I borrow some money from you? You know, I've got to be rich to marry this girl. And Kuvera, of course, you know, obeying the Supreme Personality of God, had said, yes, you can have some money, but you know, it's a pretty high interest rate. You can't, you know, like pay interest. That's what the bank does. That's how the bank makes money. They charge rent on the money they give you. That's called interest. In Fiji, they charge some people 20% a month interest. Some of the devotees who are loan sharks do that. Anyway, so that's not the banks. So Kuvera said, all right. And then Lord Vishnu said, well, actually, I need a place to have a house, too. So we went to another incarnation of his named Lord Varahadev. It's an interesting story. And he said, can I borrow some land? And so Lord Varahadev had this land on the top of what's called Tirumala Hills. And there's Tirupati is on the ground, and Tirumala is the hill. There's actually seven hills which represent Anantashesh. So he said, all right, you can have this land. Okay. So then there was this really nice Vivaha Yajna. in which Lord Vishnu marries this Maya Sita, who is, you know, a very beautiful girl because she was actually a reflection of Sita Devi. So he gets married to her. She's also called Boo Devi in South India. And another name is Bhumi, of course, the earth goddess. She's a manifestation or the personification of the earth, the controlling deity of the earth. So he marries her, and they're just leaving the marriage, getting ready to go on their honeymoon. And when they were getting ready to go on their... You know what a honeymoon is? No, you don't know. Anyway, that's the thing that people do after they get married. So they go to the Gold Coast or something. But he was...
That's their honeymoon.
So they didn't want to go to the Gold Coast. But anyway, they were getting ready to go on their honeymoon, and who do they run into but the real Lakshmi? And the real Lakshmi got pretty upset. You know, who is this girl that you're with? And Lord Vishnu basically was speechless. He couldn't say, you know, because actually if your wife catches you like that, it's pretty bad. Especially getting married to someone else. I mean, she happens to walk in on the Vivaha Yagya. It's pretty intense. So that's really what happened. So anyway, Lakshmi begins to get angry at Maya Sita. You know, how could you marry my husband? What are you doing? Didn't you know he was married already? So those two girls start to have an argument about, you know, about who should be married to Vishnu. So Vishnu decides, I got to get out of here. You know, I got to go somewhere. This is too much, you know, two women yelling and screaming at each other, you know, can't tolerate it. So Lord Vishnu, what he does to get out of it, he turns himself into a deity. You know, so he's like this big deity that we call in South India Balaji. So he turns himself into Balaji. And then the girls look around and they see, uh-oh, her husband's become a deity. What are we going to do? And so what they do is they join him, and they also become deities. And that's actually the origin of the Balaji deity in South India. So anyway, the reason I told that story is because it's a pastime. In the pastime, apparently Lord Vishnu needs someone in order to be happy. But that's just a pastime. He doesn't actually need anyone to be happy. But anyway, I told the pastime just to show, to prove a counterpoint to that. So Lord Vishnu is actually equal to the demigods and the demons. But we have this verse in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Yayata mam prapajante tam sadaiva bhajamiham, mamavartman vartante manusha partha sarvasha, that Krishna is reciprocating with people. As people reciprocate with me, I reciprocate with them. Now, how does he do that? Generally, the super soul. And we're not talking just about killing demons and helping the devotees, Prichanaya Sadhanam, Vinachaya Jadushkatam. That means whatever you want, he actually gives you the intelligence, matakshmatir gyanam aponam cha, to do that. That's interesting, isn't it? Like if you really want to be a demon, Krishna gives you demoniac intelligence. If you want to be an atheist, Krishna teaches you how to be an atheist as a super soul. Or if you want to be a bird, Krishna teaches you how to migrate from one continent to another. Just like you have these birds that go from Siberia to Australia, isn't it? And they don't have GPSs. Someone said to me yesterday that we should put GPS devices on all the gurus so we know where they are at all times. Ajita said that to me, anyway. He said, you have to protect so the disciples can find out where their guru is, whether he's in the bar, whether he's doing this. Interesting, he wanted to implant it under my skin last night. But anyway, so this is really Krishna West, you know. So the birds, they don't have GPS devices. It's not that you see the birds with this little screen on them, you know, plugging in. Let us go to Perth today. Perth, you know, so many kilometers. How many kilometers? About 10,000 kilometers, actually, from Siberia. And so that's Krishna just guiding them. Prabhupada said that what we say is instinct is actually super soul. giving people or giving entities information. And Krishna is also fulfilling the desires too. If you really want something in this world, then let me get some tissue up. If you really want something, then Krishna fulfills your desires, but not always in the way you want, in a different way. Let's say I want to eat opulent food, but I have bad karma. So then Krishna gives me a pig body, so I can fulfill my desire, but I didn't have a good enough karma. Because what determines what type of body we take in next life? Two things. Not only karma, it's desire. Just like what determines what type of car you buy is not only your desire, but your money. You understand the two factors? Like if you want a very nice car, but you don't have any money, then you just have to buy, what's the cheapest car here? A Toyota Corolla or something like that? Then you have to buy a Toyota Corolla, even though you wanted a Mercedes. So, anyway. So Krishna actually fulfills your desires, and he gives you intelligence according to your desires, which is really interesting. So that's why we have to really be careful about our desires, because Krishna is fulfilling it, and he's giving us intelligence. I mean, I'll tell you one funny story about that in my own life. I went to Vrindavan one time with a friend, and I was trying to encourage this friend. He was 50 years old, been married before, to remain unmarried. You know, he's 50 years old. That's the time for Vanaprastha or something. And so I went to the desire tree, and I hugged the desire tree, and I said, please let my friend be, you know, not have to get married again. And so I went to him and I said, I just prayed for you. And he said, why did you do that, Maharaj? You shouldn't have done that without my permission. And then he ran to the same desire tree and prayed the opposite. And then within 2 weeks, he was married again. So you have to be careful what you desire, especially with desire trees or touchstones or surabhi cows. You know, you really have to be careful what you desire, because you may get it and then it will cause more problems for you. Anyway, so that's Krishna's position. He's reciprocating. So then why does he deal with demons in different ways? I mean, some demons you actually see, they get liberated, and other demons just go to hell. It's interesting. I mean, I'll give you an example. Like Shishupal, or let's say Putana. Putana is a better example. The example in the seventh canto is Shishupal, but I'm using Putana as an example. Like Putana, she tried to kill Krishna, and what happened? Does anyone know?
Liberated.
Not only liberated, she got to be like Krishna's mother in the spiritual world. I mean, that's even better than liberation. Shishupal only got liberation. Whereas Vena, he went to hell. You know that story of Vena? Vena was the son of King Anga, and his mother was like fear personified, the daughter of fear personified, and he was such a nice kid, he used to kill his friends when he went out to play with them. I remember there was one devotee who actually called his son Vena. It was the nastiest kid I've ever met in my life. So, what's that?
Did the Brahmins get rid of him?
Yeah, no, we got rid of the father. And automatically the kid was gone. Can you imagine calling your kid Vena or your daughter Durga or something like that? So, I mean, Durga's a devotee, that's all right. So Vena was killed by the curse of the Brahmanas because he was doing so many sinful activities, and he went to hell. And whereas you have the case of Shishupal getting liberation, of course he was one of Jayavijaya. But let's say Putana. Putana did not come from the spiritual world. So why did she get not only liberated but go back and be Krishna's mother? It's very interesting. And it's explained by Shukadeva Goswami that when one meditates on the Lord, either as one's enemy in an intense way, or as one's friend, or as one's worshipable object, then you get purified. So the Shukadeva Goswami says, somehow or other you should intensely meditate on the Lord. Either you hate him or you love him. But somehow or other you should be thinking of Krishna. That's pretty good, isn't it? Somehow or other think of Krishna, whether you hate him or love him. Of course, I'm not saying that you should hate Krishna, because that's unfavorable devotional service. So why did Putana, instead of just getting plain old liberation, you know, personal liberation like Shishupal, why did Putana actually become Krishna's mother? Because not only did she meditate on Krishna with hate, but there was a mixed motive. And that motive was, I can tell it by explaining her previous life. Previously to being that beautiful lady Putana, she was actually the sister of Bali Maharaj. You all know Bali Maharaj? He's a little dwarf, and not Bali Maharaj. He had Vamana take everything. Vamana was the dwarf Brahmana who took everything from Bali Maharaj because Bali Maharaj had taken over the kingdom of Indra. And Bali Maharaj was the grandson of Pallava Maharaj, who was in a nice demon family. So anyway, Bali Maharaj had taken over the whole kingdom, the heavenly planets, and then Lord Vamana comes, and Lord Vamana was a very cute little Brahmin boy. And so Bali Maharaj's sister saw him, and as soon as she saw him, her maternal affection became awakened. She said, "Wow, what a nice kid. I would love to be his mother. Oh, please, my dear Lord, let me become his mother." I mean, sometimes you see that, like, ladies become envious of someone else's kids and say, "Well, I'd like to be his mother. Why did that other lady get him as a son?" So then what happened is Lord Vamana did something that really aggravated her. What did he do? He took away Bali's kingdom because Bali offered him 3 steps of land, you know, cover the earth, cover the universe, and there was nowhere else to go. So then Lord Vishnu happened to push Bali down to the lower regions of the universe, Sutala. And she got angry because of her brother-sisterly connection. She said, "I may be his mother, but I'm going to kill him." So it was a mixed desire. Interesting. So next life, she appeared as Putana. And she got a chance to try to kill Krishna, which is not possible. Krishna took her as his mother. He sucked out her life air and accepted her as his mother because of her desire. It's interesting. So that's another point that even if you have some really bad desire, I'm not saying you should, then and some good desire, Krishna sees the good. He's so merciful. He sees the good stuff, and then he purifies the bad desire away. Which is really nice. Like he did in the case of Dhruva. I mean, Dhruva, I can't say it was a bad desire, but it was a material desire to have a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma, right? He was chanting, "Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya," with great determination. And as a result, he saw Lord Vishnu, but then when he saw Lord Vishnu, all the impure things had gone away, right? It's nice that when you see Lord Vishnu, or when you purify yourself, you chant, all the impure things go away. And then he said, "I was looking for some pieces of broken glass, but I found a wonderful gem or a diamond." So you see, this is interesting. So somehow or other, one has to think of Krishna in that way. And so what does that mean for us? Let's apply it to our own lives. Most of us are not inimical to Krishna. Most of us don't want to kill Krishna. Anyone here want to kill Krishna? But we get angry at Krishna sometimes. I mean, let's be honest. Some of us get angry. You know, why did you do this to me? Why did you make this thing happen? One time I got angry at Indra. I was, you know, anger happens. You know, we can't help. One time I was starting a temple somewhere and it kept raining. Everything was stuck in the mud and it never stopped raining. So eventually I took a stone and tried to throw it up in the air at Indra. Kind of stupid, but I got so angry, "You stupid Indra," and the kid still kept raining. He didn't feel threatened by my anger. Don't try that. So we have mixed desires, right? I mean, we have to be honest. If we don't have mixed desires, we're pure devotees. The definition of pure devotee is anyabhilashitoshunyam jnanakarmanavritam anukulnyena krishnamashilanam. No other desire, not even desire for liberation, no desire for knowledge, not no desire, just simply desire to please Krishna favorably and actively, according to Srila Rupa Goswami. That's the nutshell verse in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So, and we come, according to Krishna and the Gita, we come for four basic reasons to the movement. Because we want wealth, because we're inquisitive, we want knowledge, or we're in distress. Chaturvidha bhajanti mam, as Krishna says in the Gita. So, we have to dovetail these desires to make ourselves enthusiastic and Krishna conscious. In other words, do service according to our psycho-physical nature. That's why we'll be enthusiastic and focused. Prabhupada said in the Gita that in the beginning we're attached to the service, and at the end we're actually attached to Krishna in his personal form. So we have to find some service, even though, you know, it's a mixed motive. You know, why are you coming to the temple? Well, I like the taste of prasadam. Why are you coming to the temple? Well, I just like to hang out with the devotees. I mean, that's a pretty nice desire. Why are you serving in this particular way? Because I like to, that's my mode of nature. So that becomes purified if we find something we like to do, that's Varnashram actually, in a nutshell, for Krishna, then we can be focused 24 hours a day, and that very same thing is non-different than Krishna. Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmagno brahmanohutam brahmatena gantavyam brahmakarma samadhi. That's Bhagavad Gita. It says, what you do for Krishna is actually non-different from Krishna, and if you're absorbed in that activity, then that's in samadhi. In other words, that's the same thing as being absorbed in Krishna, which is interesting. It gives the example of ghee. When you throw it in the fire, it becomes spiritualized. Or Prabhupada said, Prabhupada's example is when you put an iron rod in the fire, it becomes gradually fire. So we engage in service, and we meditate on doing our service, whatever our service is, according to the directions of the temple president. There's an advertisement I was paid to make. So according to the directions, you know, working in cooperation with the other devotees, and then we get purified. That's our method, just like Putana got purified. Or even Sirpanaka. Here's another example. I'll end with that story. Sirpanaka approached Lord Ramchandra, right? And she, first of all, she was thinking of eating him. Because that's what Rakshasas do. They eat people. You know, when they smell people, they go, fee, fi, fo, fum. I smell the blood of a human being. You know, I know that's not the fum. But anyway, So when she saw Lord Ramchandra, she fell in love with him. Then Lord Ramchandra, joking with her, said, actually, my brother's here, his wife's not here, so better you go and have fall in love with my brother. So Sirpanaka went to Lakshman and said, hey, Lakshman, I'm in love with you. It's called love at first bite. Anyway, so, for Rakshasa. So, so anyway, it says you fell in love. And then Lakshman said, no, you marry me, you're going to be married to a servant. You know, I'm always serving Ram. It's not a good idea. If you go back to Ram, I'm sure he'll forget that thin-waisted lady because Sirpanaka had a beer belly. So anyway, so she went back to Ram, and then eventually she ended up attacking Sita Devi, right? And then Lakshman did a nosectomy on her. And an earectomy. You know, that means cutting something off. Ectomy, right? That's medical terms. I mean, she had a cute nose after that. You know, like the ladies go for nose jobs sometimes. So Lakshman did that. And she went away screaming. And then she got her brother Ravana to attack. So anyway, so you'd think, Sirpanaka, that lust that she had, what good is that? But it caused her to meditate on Ram. So in the next life, she took birth as a hunchback lady in Mathura, Kupcha. Interesting, isn't it? Even though there was hate there, but she had some lust. And then what happened is that, you know, Krishna came to her and said, give us some of the sandalwood pulp that's meant for Kamsa. And she gave it to them, and then Krishna just gave her, became a chiropractor, and he actually straightened out her back, and she became tall and beautiful, and then she invited Krishna to her home by pulling on his dhoti in a very lusty way. In other words, her love was not pure, but then Krishna visited her in the home and she became completely purified, a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And even some of the gopis who were not completely purified, that when they worship Krishna in lust, that helped them become completely purified, especially when their husbands forbade them from seeing Krishna and they had to leave their bodies. That's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the point is that somehow or other fix our minds on Krishna. I don't advocate being lusty to Krishna, angry with Krishna, but I advocate finding some service you'd like to do and you really are attached to doing, and then you get purified and ultimately you become a pure devotee and see Krishna. So anyway, so see, there's some of the points. I think I covered a lot. We're already late, so any questions or comments? Questions, comments, arguments?
No.
Yeah.
The gopis' husbands in the Vrindavan pastimes, they must have been pure devotees too, because to put up with their wives, because social protection would have been prohibitory if they're going out nighttime, like, says that, you know, he's supposed to cross the threshold.
Yeah, you can teach that to all the ladies. They're not supposed to cross the threshold.
Yeah.
But what happened is that the gopis, they manifested like duplicates, clones. So their husbands were thinking that they were at home. That's interesting, isn't it? So the husbands were thinking, oh, my dear wife is at home, she's being so obedient, rolling chapatis or whatever they do, and churning the butter. But their wives were actually with Krishna. So in this way, in many cases, they didn't suspect anything. And there were some who suspected. I mean, you have Abhimanyu, who is Radharani's so-called husband, who suspected, and of course her mother-in-law, Jatila, and sister-in-law, Katila, were continually suspecting.
Always blaming everyone.
Yeah, but anything, they were blaming. So Krishna had to make so many tricks to associate with Radharani, and sometimes he had to dress up in drag. You know what that is? That means that Krishna had to dress as a woman so he could associate with Radharani. And there's so many stories that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur tells about that. So Abhimanyu was definitely suspecting. I mean, there's one funny story. I mean, I just remember all these stories. That one time Krishna was associating with Radharani in this temple called the Gauri Temple. It's right around Govardhan. And Krishna had come in as a woman because Radharani had previously been angry with him. So, and Krishna had put on all the deity's jewelry so he looked like a very nice woman. So Abhimanyu comes in with his mother, Jatila and Kutila, to try, because they think Krishna's there. They know Krishna's there because Krishna's pets are right outside. Krishna's pet peacock is right outside the temple. So they come in and they think they're going to find Radharani with Krishna. So they come in and Radharani faints immediately, seeing that she's caught. And she faints in such a way that she's offering dandavats to Krishna. And so they think that Krishna is the deity come out of the deity. You know, the Durga deity or Gauri. Gauri is Durga. And so they think that, wow, she's worshipping Durga. This is very nice. And they don't know it's Krishna. And so then Durga, who is Krishna, begins to speak and says, because you've distrusted Radharani, you're going to die in a few days. And so then everyone gets worried and offers obeisances to Krishna. You know, you actually have Radharani's mother-in-law and sister offering, and husband offering obeisances to Krishna, who's just been associating with Radharani. And so anyway, and the deity says, no, there's no way, you're not going to be forgiven. Then Radharani comes back to consciousness and she understands it's actually what Krishna's doing. She says, please forgive my husband. He didn't understand. And then Krishna, as the deity, says, yes, he'll be forgiven this one time, but he should never distrust you again. He should never think that you're associating with that Krishna person. And then, so, they say, okay, we'll behave ourselves now. So they all walk out, and they leave Krishna along with Radharani. So, anyway, it's a nice story. So sometimes the husbands are aware, and they get a little angry. And actually, even the Yajnik Brahmana's wives, when they went to bring food to Krishna and Balaram, they fell in love with Krishna. They wanted to have a conjugal relationship, but Krishna said, no, you can't do it. You've got to go back to your husbands. Don't worry, your husbands will be happy with you. And their husbands were. at that point. So anyway, that's any other questions or comments? Or problems or issues or complaints? Yeah.
Maharaj, what age was Krishna and Radharani when she was married to
him? They were about 16. About 16. The girls got married really young at that point. And actually, Krishna never looked more than 16. He always looked, even when he was in the battle of Kurukshetra, he was a 16-year-old boy driving the chariot. Even though he was like 125 years old, or on the planet at that particular point. That's Krishna's eternal form in the spiritual world, is actually that form when he's about 16 years old. In the spiritual world, Krishna doesn't manifest the baby form, just the form of 16-year-old boy. So any other questions? Yes.
If something like bad does happen to you, like you break your leg or you know you're going bankrupt or whatever, because you're a devotee, you know Krishna's in control. And like I said, sometimes you get angry at Krishna.
Not a good idea.
But how? What should we think when something happens to us?
Yashaham anagrinami harishyeta dinam shirai. For those who I especially favor, I take away certain things that they're attached to so they simply can chant Hare Krishna. And sometimes Krishna says, of course, Prabhupada translates this verse, so their family rejects them and everybody, you know, doesn't accept them, and then they're just left with Krishna. So basically, when these things happen, it's Krishna's arrangement to bring us closer to him. And even when Krishna punishes the demons, it's to rectify them, not just to punish them. Krishna never punishes for the sake of punishment. He punishes for the sake of rectification. So, anyway, when this happens, we should take it as a challenge rather than a problem. Actually, there are no problems. Everything is a challenge. Just rephrase things that happen. You break your leg, it's a challenge. And it's an opportunity. If you break your leg, nobody's going to ask you to do too much service. You can read more. Isn't it? You can read and chant more, and the temple president can say anything he wants. Oh, I got a broken leg here. Unless you happen to be at a fanatical place. One time I was, many years ago, I was in New Vrindavan, which was headed by Kirtananda, who was a real fanatic. And so I had a high fever. No, it was the summer of 71 or 72, and we were preparing for Prabhupada. Prabhupada's coming. I had a high fever, I mean really high fever, and I couldn't move. And then I was lying in my sleeping bag, because in those days devotees didn't have beds. So we light his sleeping bag, and he comes down and says, "What are you doing?" I said, "I have a fever." You know, a sweat was pouring out of me. The eyes were just like swelled up. And he says, "The best way to overcome fever is to get up and work, boy." And so he hit me with a stick. I remember to this day, boom. I said, "Okay, Hare Krishna." So I get up, and he sent me out to work chopping wood with a fever. And so we get to this piece of wood that was actually as hard as a stone. And so I was hitting it, and I didn't make a dent in the wood. And then he walks by. I got the last leg.